cliffcentral.com.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. It's Richard Angus here, the CEO of the finance team. The first half hour of the business skills conversation in association with USB Ed is going to be discussing our theme today of privacy and data protection. Just a reminder, last week we had Dr. Sean Cunningham in studio with us, and we were talking about the big picture of technology and the fact that technology is not about just physical things. It's about how we organize people, things around them, and knowledge holistically. So that's a good podcast to download. As I said, today's theme is about privacy and data protection. Joining me in studio today is our guest, Palissa, and I'm not even going to try that click. Go for it.
Mangoyi.
There we go. Palissa is a faculty member with USB Ed and lectures on management and leadership. She's also the managing director of Prime Eminence, a strategic management and leadership development consulting company. With over 10 years' experience in consulting, managerial and advisory roles, including being the resident analyst on a consumer affairs program, she continues to provide thought leadership on a wide range of issues, and data protection and privacy being one of them. So welcome to studio.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. So the whole world of data protection and the concept of data protection and privacy has been a hot topic for a little while. I think one only has to think to what's going on in the United States at the moment and the debates about did Hillary put something there where she shouldn't have that gets people into trouble. I mean, what is data protection? I mean, we say the word data protection and privacy and it just rolls off the tongue. Mm-hmm. Please, what is data protection? Why are we worried about data protection anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very important aspect in the modern business world and also at an individual level as well. But firstly, as we delve into this subject of data protection and privacy protection, I'd just like from a Prime Eminence perspective to congratulate the new information regulator, Advocate Panzitla Kula, on her new role and her team. So when we speak about data protection, we're referring to the legal protection that's afforded to individuals that legislation terms as data subjects. We trying to balance the right to privacy, the constitutional right to privacy, versus the right to access of information that companies and businesses at large have the right to access. So privacy is a very important part of our lives, because privacy then speaks to that constitutional right to individual privacy and to be free from intrusion. So data protection in line with privacy then becomes the basis for legal protection. And as such, legislation is in place, such as the Protection for Information POPI, is in place for individuals to be able to have recourse in terms of how the information is handled.
Mm. So, I mean, I guess my bigger question is, so why would we need this protection? Surely if I want to protect my information, I keep it confidential, I keep it, and that's it. I mean, why even stress about this at all?
It is a big part of our transaction. Firstly, I would like to answer that question in two ways. Firstly, at an individual level, the privacy is a very valuable aspect in terms of an individual right. Mm. And secondly, at a business level, privacy is a trade instrument, or the information that a particular business possesses is a trade instrument. And broadly, at a country level as well, if a country is seen not to have appropriate controls in terms of the flow of information, not only nationally but across borders, it is seen as a risk for all manner of threats. So legislation, therefore, is required to be in place. And lastly, historically, South Africa has been lagging behind in terms of a comprehensive legislation that guides how information, how data is protected, how privacy is protected. Mm. We've been at a point where we had fragmented legislation. We had data protection embedded in some of the legal instruments, such as the Protection of Access to Information, such as the National Credit Act. However, the new protection of the POPI laws is a comprehensive law that is in line with international standards.
Okay, so I guess as I listen to you there, I get a better sense, because the reality is, while I'm saying, well, if it's mine and it's private, I should keep it that way and just keep it. But the reality is, I need to share certain bits of information with myself, from myself to various parties, like, you know, you're talking there of employer-employee relationships, supplier-customer relationships, myself and my bank. You know, I would imagine, you know, as you talk about it, I think to myself, sure, we actually do share a lot of our information with other people out there. And I guess, yeah, okay, so that starts to make a little bit more sense in terms of the stuff that perhaps you don't want to go beyond the intended use, per se.
Absolutely.
And I'm also hearing you saying that we've lagged as a country behind others in terms of, you know, this type of thing. I mean, do all countries have this type of legislation in place?
Absolutely. Most countries do have. Okay. Our standard, from a South African point of view, is termed to be linked with the European directive, mm-hmm. The UK instrument.
Okay.
And there are core data principles that protect data protection laws try to enforce. If we were to refer to our own legislation, our POPI legislation that was signed by our president in 2013, one of the core principles around data protection is the issue of accountability, that as business owners then have to take cognizance of. So accountability then refers to the fact that you, as an owner of that information, have a responsibility to ensure that it is used in a manner that it is intended for. And there are various principles that also check whether the information is being used for its intended purpose, for its scope of purpose, and whether there is a further processing requirement that is required for that information usage.
Hmm. Now, I mean, when you say that, you know, there's the, let's call it the international frameworks that we're now becoming part of, I would imagine, I mean, just give me a little bit of a sense of, so how exactly does this data protection framework work? I mean, you know, we throw out the word data protection, but what is that, how's that framework operating? Just give us some sense of that legal framework, per se.
All right. So in South Africa, like I mentioned, historically, how the protection of personal information came into effect was because the South African National Legal Rights Reform made a suggestion that we do not have a proper legislation. And they made recommendation then that we have a single legislation that deals primarily with data protection and privacy. And within that, then there are standards such as the European Directive that influence across the globe how countries then govern the usage of information.
Mm. Okay. So now let's get a little bit more practical in terms of a business and data protection on a daily basis, because what we've talked about now is, up till now, is almost, let's call it the frameworks. But as a business person, I'm sitting here going, Okay, great. So initially my thinking was, well, if I just keep it to myself, I'm okay. You've corrected the error of my ways there in terms of that line of thinking. So now I've got, and I guess as a business person, I've got two sides to this scenario, because I've got my own personal information, and then I would imagine I've got other facets of my world, and I'd like to explore each kind of, let's call it independently, because I've got suppliers. Okay, so trade information that they're giving me to use in my business. I've got customers, and I'm interacting with them. And then I've also got employees, and those are, let me call it, my three yes, audiences that absolutely. I'm thinking of at this point. So talk to me a little bit about data protection and what I would need to be thinking about. Let's start with our employees. I mean, your employees apply for a job, they get a job, they sign their employment contract, and I'm happy. I pay them every month and I'm happy. Am I not? I mean, what do I have to worry about in terms of that data protection space there?
Again, the basis for that response are the core principles embedded in the POPI legislation. The guidelines around the fact that you as the business owner is accountable for governing the entire value chain around the usage of that information. So from the collection of that information to how it is stored, to how it is used, and getting consent to use that type of information, those are the things that you as a business owner are accountable for. So we're trying to now marry the principle of accountability into practical application. So the fundamental principle there is that as a business owner, you have full accountability to the entire usage of that information. At an individual level, their consumer, or the data subject, as it is termed, is expecting that that information will be properly handled and properly governed, and that they'll be aware of how that information is used.
Okay, so I'm already starting to see some red flags go up in my mind, because, you know, you send me, let's say you're applying for a job with me, you send me your CV with a whole lot of information on. Am I now expected to manage where that CV goes in my organization, who has access to it, what they do with any information they've gleaned from the CV? Is that the expectation?
Absolutely. As I said in the opening statement, if we were to look at data protection and privacy in two approaches, one at an individual level and secondly at a business level. At an individual level, the expectation is that the information will be used for intended purposes. I'll cite an example. Mm-hmm. You're an employee. You mm-hmm. submit comprehensive information regarding your private life in line with a risk assessment process that a particular company requires. Mm-hmm. Let's say hypothetically as a form of a job assessment. Mm-hmm. As a business owner, as an organization, you ought to then have governance and appropriate controls to ensure that that particular information is used for its intended use, mm-hmm. i.e. the risk assessment aspect in this specific example. And secondly, the storage of that information ought to be in a manner that does not compromise and violate the individual or the data subject's rights, constitutional right to privacy, constitutional rights free from human intrusion. So the accountability aspects then becomes applicable in such instances.
Yeah, now that's really interesting, because fundamentally, if you've got, say, for example, a CV that's traveled around or some disclosures in that employment process, I mean, I don't know about you, but I generally don't track. Once I've sent an email to somebody, I don't track what they do with that information, where they put it, where they save it. I mean, what happens if they save it on a computer that then gets stolen, or on a memory stick that then gets left somewhere, and suddenly that person's CV and personal information is floating around, let's call it in, I guess this is a strange word.
The universe.
In the clear, in the open. You know, it starts, I mean, I as much as I hate it, it starts to get me back to this thing of, well, everything that you email, you know, that you need to protect confidentiality on, it needs to be in an attachment that's password protected. And I guess those are some of the things that we start now having to think about as a smaller business, you know, what do I send around in, let me call it open mm-hmm. on an email as opposed to inside password protected scenarios, for example. And then, yeah, of course, you have to remember all of those beloved passwords. So you know, how do you do that? And I guess, you know, things like where do you store your employee files and how do you store? I mean, just thinking, I mean, we're now still on the employee conversation. I mean, just, you know, simple things like, sick notes. Absolutely. I mean, you know, so you got a sick note and you left and you say to somebody, oh, just drop it in my intray there. But hold on a second. That's private information that's being dropped on an intray. You know, from what you're saying, the person has an expectation of the privacy around that piece of documentation, and I need to manage that as a business person. The Act now requires that I apply my mind to how I use that or how that information is stored, where it is stored, what we do with it, and I guess all the business processes around it.
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds like businesses are going to have to do some rethinking of how they run their business processes there. It's not as simple as, oh, well, just business as usual and make sure that you know, put a password on your file server anymore.
Yes, well spotted right there. Actually, how we as strategists position the POP in the business arena is that it is a key strategic enabler. Mm-hmm. Because if you as a business owner can demonstrate commitment to how you handle a customer's information, you can leverage on that point, because as a consumer, you would be comfortable to transact with an organization that puts high priority in the manner in which they handle your information and private and confidential information. So it is an exciting space that we say to businesses out there, they need to view the POP implementation as an opportunity for future growth, as a key leverage that they can use as a competitive advantage as we, you know, journey through this implementation phase. Mm. And secondly, it challenges how businesses structure their systems, because as you correctly put it earlier on, that you now ought to think very carefully around your storage mechanisms. Mm. You now ought to think around restrictions on permissions, who has access to what. You now have to think the scope and how you allow access for processing of information. If you give someone a particular document about a person's historic medical records, what is the scope of usage? And then it also brings in a very fundamental element, around ethics and ethical conduct. Mm. And how then you train your employees and the rest of your team on how to handle sensitivities around information usage and around sharing of private and confidential information.
I was going to say, this goes way beyond just the, let me call it, the technical elements of data protection. It also goes down to training your staff, what appropriate behaviors to use and how to interact. And I guess that's always been there. I mean, we've always known, for example, in the HR department, you're dealing with confidential personal information. Mm-hmm. But I guess it takes it to a whole new level.
Absolutely.
In the business. Now, let's get into the space of, say, for example, a supplier relationship. Because a supplier is going to give you things like their price lists. They're going to give you their specifications for their products. They're going to give you technical manuals. They're going to give you all sorts of information that allow you to represent them. I mean, I gather they would have the same expectations of data protection and all of this. Let's call them the trade secrets.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned in the beginning, that information is a key trade instrument. Mm. And not only between a particular company and its own suppliers or stakeholders, but broadly as a country and in industries, companies compete. If there are threats and data leaks or breaches, obviously, it will impact on a company's performance. But I also want to pick up on what you said earlier around the fact, the ramifications, and the fact that we've always taken for granted that if you work in HR, for example, you will exhibit the principles that are enshrined in the legislation. This is why the work that Advocate Phantsi Tlhakula and her team is very important, and we're so excited that she is in this space right now, is the fact that it's no longer implied and expected, but there are controls and ramifications for companies that do not comply.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, before you'd almost have to, somebody would have to prove a breach has occurred and actually go through quite a legalistic process. Now you've almost got a framework, and I would imagine it's not just civil action; it's almost a criminal framework. If you found guilty of breaching this framework, you could face some criminal elements as well as just a civil claim for damages from a particular party, I would imagine, or not?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm always worried about these worlds of the orange jumpsuit. You know, they say that, you know, they're saying now in business, orange is the new black.
Yes.
And it's becoming more and more evident in the legal framework that, we joke about the orange is the new black in the TV shows, but the reality is, if you look at things like BE legislation now has a criminal element for fronting.
Yep.
If you look at many of the acts now, they are creating a criminal framework that supports the legislative framework, because it is just so often a case of, oh, well, so if I don't comply, what are you going to do?
Yes.
The threat of putting directors of companies in a yellow, in an orange jumpsuit starts getting people a little bit more focused, I do believe.
Mm.
Now, let's get, as we close, look towards the close of the show, let's talk for a moment about that relationship with our, the final relationship that I identified with customers and the customer base. Because, I mean, clearly that must be an area that's fraught with issues in terms of how you handle the data of your customer, because they're giving you information, you're giving them products, services, whatever it may be. What are the issues here? We're going to talk a little later to one of our other guests about the whole question of marketing into a base of customers and things like marketing consent and those types of things. And the whole principle, I guess, of customer relationship management and customer information management comes to mind immediately. I mean, do customers, I mean, I must admit that I find it so annoying. The moment I make a phone call to certain organizations, and I'm not going to name and shame here,
please,
but if I make a call to certain organizations, I know without fail, within a day or two, I'm getting phone calls back from, you know, hi, I'm calling from so-and-so. How's your financial affairs looking? No, I had them reviewed 4 weeks ago because somebody else phoned me back after making this phone call the first time. This constant almost mining of my information in terms of my cell phone number and my status to say, oh, this person might need some financial planning done or whatever it may be. I think that for me irks me a little and it makes me feel uncomfortable. Phoning me 20 times after my car's been serviced to say, are you happy? Are you happy? Are you happy? Yes, I know it is the same garage that's phoning and the same brand that's phoning, but there's a point at which I go, this is almost like intrusive in my,
yes,
in my world. What expectations do I have as a customer, and what should business people be thinking about as we close out?
Yes. I like the fact that you use the word intrusive, because that's exactly the aspect that the legislation is trying to address. Poppy specifically deals with direct marketing, and the important message there is that the person has, or rather their targeted consumer,
mm-hmm,
ought to consent or opt in, as they term it in the legislation. So, you have to consent to a particular message that, a particular company wants to direct it to you. And it's only then when they receive their consent, then they can proceed with direct marketing, for example. Again, there are a lot of things that you as a company can do. You can review your existing database of customers, which I think a lot of companies have started doing already, and see where the opportunities for opt-in are, so that you don't just bombard people with all these messages. And for new customers, obviously, you have to have processes in place to ensure that they have the provision of all consent that is required by the legislation.
Now, I'll save this question for our guest later on, because there was a specific statement made to me the other day,
yes,
around the legislative framework around Poppy and consent,
yes,
around business to business marketing and whether it was or wasn't required. So we'll talk about that in the next part of the show. So, I mean, as a as a consumer out there, I guess my expectation is that my information and my data as your customer is protected, and I expect you as my business that's interacting with me to do exactly that. Now, the other thing that I see happening a lot of, and I'd like to close off the show with this part of the conversation, and we've talked about privacy and data protection. I see a lot of email hitting my inbox that's coming from all sorts of places. And unfortunately, I've just had the experience over the last month of two businesses that I have relationships with and connections with, which were both hit by ransomware delivered into the businesses via email to different parties in the business, and people weren't aware enough and click, click, bang, you've got a problem. Now, fortunately, in the case of both of these institutions, we could roll back the data fairly quickly, and it wasn't a major issue for us at all. And I could say we were prepared for that. But the reality that I'm asking is, where are people getting – I mean, the email addresses that I guess we all have emails that are pretty much out there per se, but I mean, it almost seems like somebody's managed to get their hands on the good old internet's version of the address book, and we're just getting all of the spam email coming in. And it's one thing to get a marketing, you know, did I give marketing consent? Did I get your special offer? It's another thing for somebody's addresses, etc., to be spoofed and to have a virus attached. And what's really starting to concern me is the level of sophistication that people are using, obviously, this information out there and then attaching this nefarious software to. You know, I'm getting stuff that actually does look like a proof of payment from somebody. And, you know, you get to the 29th of the month and somebody sends you an email, and without thinking, you go, oh, yeah, I'm expecting an email from Vanessa for a payment. Hold on, that wasn't her. That was the hacker with the, you know, encoded thing, and yes, it's now, and I'm being ransomware. I mean, as businesses, what do we do about this kind of stuff? Is there anything we can do?
Yes, I could not agree with you more there, which is where the issue of first line protection comes in. And in fact, this is an aspect that I'm very passionate about from an individual perspective and a company perspective, as I have personally experienced privacy violation issues in my own individual capacity and a business. So we advise then, which is a journey that Prime Eminence as a company is undertaking as we speak, companies to adopt first line protection measures. So your servers, if you have a CRM database, if you have customers and supplier information, how are the security measures in your data storage mechanisms? How tight are your access points? Can anyone, you know, just be able to get in and, you know, crack your security codes?
Yeah, as you say that, I'm thinking to myself, I'm saying, you know, where did they get all the email addresses from? Yeah. But I guess if somebody got into somebody else's customer base, you know, I mean, heaven forbid this were to happen, but I guess, you know, somebody gets into a bank database or a Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, you know, any of the big telco providers, government institutions, the Joburg City Council, you know, and name the institution. And in these organizations have thousands of email addresses sitting there for the taking.
Yes.
I mean, what better target, I guess? So they must have to deal with this challenge probably more than me with my little address book in my little entity.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's an interesting challenge to deal with. Okay, well, thank you very much, Melissa. We really appreciate your time, Managing Director of Prime Eminence. Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. Joining us in studio will be our guest, the CEO and founder of Ask Africa, Andrea Givers, who's going to be chatting to us about a 21-year journey in the research and marketing world. Stay with us.
CliffCentral.com.